Trust, a non-profit, non-political, and non-sectarian organization on the roster of the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations, and concerned with the establishment of world cooperation and goodwill, presents Inner Sight with your host, Robert Anderson. He, with Sarah and Dale McKechnie, President and Vice President of Lucis Trust, will discuss philosophical and spiritual topics essential to everyday life. Now here's your host, Robert Anderson.
Welcome. Inner sight is simply seeing that which is always present, but not yet fully recognized. You have, within you, the ability to see yourself and the world around you in a new way, with new eyes. So, stay with us and together, we'll look at the world and ourselves with inner sight. Our topic for today, what do we mean by God? Part 3. And before we explore this topic, I'd like to say a few words about Alice Bailey, founder of the Lucis Trust. The Lucis Trust sponsors this show. Alice Bailey wrote 24 books of esoteric philosophy, and those 24 books are the main inspiration for the dialogue that you hear on this show. The following thought is also from the works of Alice Bailey. Divinity must be lived, expressed and manifested to be understood. God must be loved, known and revealed within the human heart and brain in order to be intellectually grasped. Last time you were talking about the difference between Buddhist and Judeo-Christian spirituality. Could you explain that in a little bit more detail?
I think that we said that it isn't necessarily correct to say that Buddhists don't believe in God, which is quite a prevalent assumption. And Alice Bailey comments on this in the second volume of her book, Esoteric Psychology. She says that both the Eastern and Western views of God, meaning Buddhism and the Judeo-Christian view in particular, she says both schools of thought are right, and that they don't really contradict each other. I think what she's addressing is what we've talked about before, that God is both immanent within the human heart and transcendent, apart from and beyond his complete created world. And in this understanding of God being both immanent and transcendent, I think we can understand that the Buddhists recognize a supreme source or whatever, but not a personal God. She wrote that the Buddhists don't necessarily think of the personal God in the sense that many people in the West do, because they understand God as transcendent, as having pervaded the whole universe with a fragment of himself, yet nevertheless saying, I remain apart from and beyond my creation. And that may be where the misunderstanding arises. But she says in the synthesis of the Eastern and Western teachings and in the merging of those two great schools of thought, something of the superlative whole can be sensed, merely sensed, not known. And this whole concept of God immanent and transcendent is so interesting.
Yes, it's interesting, and it's a little difficult to comprehend or to understand, I think. But there is an analogy within every human being that may be one way to help understand this, because each of us, each human being, has this same pattern of a transcendent part and a manifested part. A part within and a part without, and that's the soul on its own level is like the God transcendent, and the incarnated soul or the fragment of the soul in every human being is like the God immanent. And so if we look at ourselves, and it goes back to the Greek oracle, know thyself and thou shalt know the universe, that's one way of trying to understand or approaching this whole question.
Yes, that's a good analogy. The soul on its own level and the soul incarnated within a particular life and personality would be the equivalent of God transcendent and God immanent. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Alice Bailey writes elsewhere that the Eastern faiths have tended to emphasize God immanent, deep within the human heart. I think that's where the phrase nearer than hands or feet comes from, speaking of divinity, nearer than hands and feet. And that the Western faiths have tended to emphasize God transcendent. Probably there was a reason for that. Karen Armstrong, the religious scholar, touches on that the what are called the Abrahamic religions, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, all are monotheistic and worship the one God. But one outcome of that monotheism is that it has tended to lead or foster a sense of a personal God, one having a personal relationship with God and of the source and the power of divinity being anchored within this God and not seen as also anchored within one's own soul. It's kind of a dissociation, I think, that the monotheistic approach fosters. Maybe people will disagree with me, and you can just say to yourselves, well, what does she know? And I would agree with you, very little. But it just seemed to me that maybe that fosters the tendency to locate the source of divine power outside of oneself and to foster a sense that God is personally dwelling within a personality that you worship, rather than understanding God in terms of Godhead, the Godhead. That's a term that I think is difficult to understand, but it has many other synonyms. Some speak of the absolute, ether, the energy, the supreme. The idea being that beyond God, if we can be so blasphemous, beyond God there is what is called the Godhead, the void, the unknown, the one about whom naught may be said.
Yes, and that's this idea is expressed also in the Bailey books too, that the Godhead, the one about whom naught may be said, and it is. Here again, it's that analogy, I think, is because it's the same pattern that's repeated on a cosmic level, because, as I understand it, there is a God, maybe it's in the terms of the Logos, that overshadows even the God of this planet. Even at the planetary level, there is a God within the planet and that one about whom not may be said, that is transcendent above this planetary God. If you can understand what I'm trying to say here, but this whole idea is because it has to do with the manifested state and the non-manifested state.
Mm-hmm.
This is the basic duality of the whole universe. There is this non-manifested state where being still exists, and then there is the manifested state, whatever it is, whether it's a planet or a person or a tiny atom, it's a manifested state, and behind this there is a functioning soul or a spirit that is creating this manifested structure, this form of whatever size it is. And so if you can get this basic duality in your mind, then you begin to see that there is this transcendent state of beingness that doesn't need a form to exist, and that also happens in a human being.
But the problem is, when you try to conceptualize this transcendent state of formless being, you come up with concepts like the void, nothingness, nirvana. The Buddhist concept of nirvana is often seen as nothingness, emptiness, and that's, I think, why people sometimes, some people say Buddhism and this whole doctrine of the Godhead is depressing, because one ends up looking into a vast nothingness. But I think there shouldn't be anything depressing about trying to understand or wrap one's mind around something and state of existence of being that cannot be conceptualized. I think, if anything, that should be inspiring. But if one is intensely personal and intensely anchored to form and to materializing whatever one is trying to understand, then it's frustrating and perhaps a bit depressing.
Well, yes, and I think, as it's written in the Bailey books, that both stance, both states, as described, the Buddhist approach and the Christian, Judeo-Christian approach, are both right. They're right for the people that follow this particular religion.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to do with one's consciousness. And we in the Western world are very analytical, and we want to nail everything down and give it a word or a mm-hmm. term of some kind, and this is where the limitation comes in. It's the brain function that wants to give everything a word and a term, and there are no words for this highest state of beingness. So it's correct for the Western intellect to define it in some kind of personal way.
Well, it's the way the developing mind works, isn't it? And the Western whole thrust of Western education and orientation is to developing the powers of the concrete mind
mm-hmm.
that have led to science and technology and hygiene and many wonderful accomplishments. But it reminds me of what we were discussing a few weeks ago, the factor of analysis being one of the traits of the psychology of God, and this impulse deep within the human mind to analyze and define and name and categorize and distinguish and differentiate is an inherently divine impulse, but it's also what makes us so frustrated with trying to conceptualize something that is beyond concept. And
yeah, it's beyond concept. It's beyond a three-dimensional realm, too. I wanted to mention that. We're trying to describe a state of existence that is beyond three dimensions. It's in the fourth and fifth or sixth-dimensional realm of life. And that's where the difficulty comes in, because it's even hard to imagine fourth-dimensional existence, let alone only three or five or six. So it's
this is very tiring. I think we need a break.
For those people who just tuned in, you're listening to Inner Sight. Our topic for today, what do we mean by God? Part 3. We have a special offer from Lucis Publishing Company today, and that's the Alice Bailey book, Ponder on This. Ponder on This is a compilation of extracts from all 24 books by Alice Bailey, and 24 books is a lot of books, and I'm sure that there are going to be a priority of topics that you'd like to look at. So Ponder on This affords you the opportunity to more or less peruse an abridged version of all of the Alice Bailey themes, and you can decide which ones you want to read first, and I guess it helps you in your study of these books. And it was one of the first books that I read, Ponder on This, and it really did help me a lot as far as approaching the topics that were of higher interest to me with the 24 books by Alice Bailey. And by the way, Ponder on This does include a chapter on the nature of God, which is the subject of today's discussion. The special offer comes in the form of free shipping and handling. The book is available for $19, so that if you'd like to take advantage of this offer, send a check or money order to Lucis Publishing, Lucis is L-U-C-I-S, Lucis Publishing, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. And once again, Lucis Publishing, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. That's Jack the Money Letter for $19. And ask for the book Ponder on This. You might make a little notation saying that you heard about the offer on the show Inner Sight. If you'd like to donate, we'd certainly appreciate your donations. They're certainly evidence of your support of us, and those tax-deductible donations that you send to us, that's what keeps us on the air and gives us the support we need in order to continue doing these shows. So if you'd like to make donations and help us out, we'd appreciate it. Send donations to Lucis Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. If you'd like to get in touch with us for any reason, a package of general information about Lucis Trust, or if you would like to order other books, give us a call at 1-866-695-8247. That's a toll-free number. The easy way to remember it is 1-866-NY-LUCIS. Think of 1-866-NEW-YORK-LUCIS. All of our Inner Sight programs can be heard on our website at www.lucistrust.org. On the homepage, you'll find a link to today's program, which will be available for hearing in a day or two. Last week's program is already available, and many of our past programs can also be heard. Once again, the website, www.lucistrust.org. The theme of each week's program is posted in advance on our website, also, so that you can see in advance what next Sunday's program will be. I can't ignore the beginning of that, beginning of the opening thought today from Alice Bailey and from her works. Divinity must be lived, expressed, and manifested to be understood. Somebody like me, I mean, I've got so many flaws. How do I manifest divinity?
Slowly and in any ways that are possible to you, and with an acceptance of your complete self, which is still, as Jesse Jackson said, in progress. We are all works in progress. It's so much easier to forgive others, I think, than to forgive oneself for one's incomplete divinity. I suppose it's pride that makes us want to be seen as more than what we presently are. But we have to start with our present attainments and capacities and work from there. I was just reading a book this week in which the author's mother told him as a boy, he was a very brilliant person, even as a boy, and his mother, before she died, told him, judge less and love more. And that's a good place to start. Especially those who have an intelligence and a mind that probably works overtime. Judge less, love more. This whole process of manifesting divinity is, I think, what the world is entering into now. In the Middle Ages, the great religious figures, the spiritual people, were seen as those who renounced the world, left this mortal coil behind, and went off into pursuit of God by turning their backs on the world. But I think now, in our present day and age, we realize that God has to be seen present within the created world. That's one of the beautiful concepts from the Kabbalah, the Jewish mystical tradition, and it's called Tikkun. Rabbi Michael Lerner has a whole movement in a wonderful magazine called Tikkun, which means literally redemption. Tikkun is to transform, heal, and repair, in a sense to bring back God into the world. How do we do that? Well, I think one of the ways we do that is by fulfilling what Genesis called for. In the first book of Genesis, God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over all the earth. We have used that command to plunder the earth and its resources. But dominion really means authority, absolute authority. And authority cannot be understood without responsibility.
No, and it's the authority that... that builds. It's not the authority that tears down or that destroys. It's the authority of love that understands the, well, in terms of the world, it understands its in the environment and the needs of the environment, and it so it nurtures the world and takes care of it in a way that we would take care of a child, and nurture the child and help it to grow. And that's essentially what we need to do with the earth, because it's our own creation. And we have to work with it, in relation to the plan of God working out through the world.
Well, according to the Ageless Wisdom, that is humanity's particular role. It's the middle kingdom in the chain of being that makes up our planetary life. And as the middle or mediating kingdom, humanity's responsibility is to cooperate in the unfolding of the divine plan as it affects the lower kingdoms below human, the animal, vegetable, and mineral kingdoms, who also play a vital part in the plan. They cannot unfold their own evolution without man's cooperation. And so, seeing God present in the world, God immanent, is, I think, not going against the idea of the Godhead, which is God unmanifest, unexpressible in terms of form, because on the other hand, if God is the ground of all being, the absolute, then he is everywhere. And you said, Robert, how do we begin by living, expressing, and manifesting divinity? I think we can begin one way by remembering that behind every human being and literally every form we encounter, veiled by those forms is divinity that brought them into existence.
And you already may be manifesting more divinity than you realize. Every time you express love, or and particularly if it's a selfless kind of love, that's an expression of divinity, because that's an expression of the soul coming through. So, and all of the qualities of the soul, the love and the activity and the power of the soul, all of these are manifesting already through human beings. They just don't make the connection that it's perhaps soul qualities that are coming through. But they have to come through more vividly and more dynamically and more lively and with more livingness, as the word sometimes used.
I suppose another understanding of God immanent is that that represents the presence of divinity in as far as the human mind can register it. We can understand God dwelling within his created world. We can understand God present within human beings, and that's God immanent, personified by Christ. The other day someone was referring to Christ as his Savior, and I wondered, what does that mean when you say Christ is your Savior? I suppose what that person is saying, whether they know it or not, is that that principle which Christ embodied, which is the soul principle, is in fact what saves us all, what enables us to escape from the imprisonment of the material plane, and to realize that in essence we are spiritual beings and we survive beyond the death of the material form. That's the whole enactment of the story of Christ, but it's all so concentrated in one individual that we don't realize we are in a sense our own saviors.
Yes, and we exist in a manifested state. We also exist in a non-manifested state outside this physical realm. And this is corroborated by people who have had near-death experiences. They come back and they describe the feelings and the thoughts and their experiences on the other side. And here they are, without a body, without a form. They're outside their body entirely, and yet they're still thinking, feeling, loving human beings. They're still beings on this non-manifested state.
And interestingly, Alice Bailey says that to the soul, it really isn't that huge a matter of whether the soul is incarnation or out of incarnation. It can serve, which is its basic impulse to serve the plan, whether it's in dwelling within a body or not. To us, it seems like a huge difference, but apparently not to the soul. We started out this discussion talking about the disparity between creationism and evolution, and the argument that the scientists and the fundamentalists are having, and how really that's a false argument. And it we're kind of closing back again on that idea that God is both the creator and the cause of evolution. I really don't think there's an argument between those points of view, but that they're both necessary to form a completed understanding. The whole idea of monotheism, that it personalizes God as opposed to the Buddhist view, doesn't necessarily hold up if you think that the first monotheist was Akhenaten, the Egyptian pharaoh, who recognized God as behind or dwelling within the sun, the source of all life. And if you think of ancient Egypt, certainly the presence of the sun is a tremendous factor. But it does make life on this planet possible. And it reminds me of that ancient Indian prayer, the Gayatri, one of the oldest prayers known to human beings, that says, O thou who givest sustenance to the universe, from whom all things proceed, to whom all things return, unveil to us the face of the true spiritual sun, hidden by a disk of golden light. That touches on the realization that God does not dwell in matter, but is revealed through it and lies behind it. Maybe that's a good place to end.
Please take advantage of the special offer from Lucis Publishing Company, and that's the Alice Bailey book, Ponder on This. Ponder on This is a compilation of extracts from all 24 books by Alice Bailey. It's really a great way to get started. First, I read the autobiography of Alice Bailey, and then after that, I got into this book, because it more or less gives you an overview of all the multiple numbers of themes that are dealt with in such depth in the Alice Bailey books. So Ponder on This is a special offer. It's available for $19. Send a check or money order to Lucis Publishing, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. And if you need to get in touch with us, give us a call at 1-866-695-8247. You've been listening to Inner Sight. Now we would like to close with a world prayer called the Great Invocation. It's a call for light and love and goodwill to flow into the world and into our hearts. Let's listen for a moment to these powerful words.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into human minds. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into human hearts. May the coming one return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide all little human wills, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the human race, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth.